Welcome to Therapists Are People.
Wait, therapists are people?
A group of therapists discuss mental health, answer questions, and interview other humans. Hey everybody, how are we doing this morning?
Hi.
Good. Hello.
Apologies to our audience in advance. It is literally the first thing we're doing in the morning, recording our podcast, which I'm sure like legit podcast people are like, why would you do that? You all sound
On a
tired, but
Monday morning.
oh well, c'est la vie. Yeah,
Sign up for
exactly.
the week.
Well, this one we've been thinking around the I was gonna say around the water cooler, but we don't have a communal water cooler anymore. We've been thinking about what to do for this episode as we've been getting together and chatting, and we're steeped, at least at the time we're recording this, in pre-election times. So there's just a lot of uncertainty related to that. There's uncertainty related to the coronavirus and the vaccine. There's uncertainty for all of us at the University of Iowa related to the semester. There has been for months, and that only continues. So we thought we'd do an episode about uncertainty, about how to deal with fear and when things feel ambiguous. I don't know about you all. The thing that feels maybe the most uncertain to me is trying to figure out what my job is going to look like, even from a week-to-week basis. I feel like that's usually a pretty predictable thing as a therapist. But now, even week-to-week, there's just a lot more people coming in with urgency. And even the stability of my job sometimes is something I worry about. So, yeah, that is a like part of my world more so than it really ever was, I think pre-COVID especially. I don't know about for you all, but that's just uncertainty that I'm sitting with a lot of the time now.
When we're experiencing high stress or chronic stresses, it becomes impossible for our brain to actually think super far in advance or plan what's next because our brain is just focused on getting through the now. That's all there is to our brain. And so people in high stress environments all the time, like particularly people of color, there's research out there that shows that they have a general difficulty with answering that question, where do you see your life in 5 years if you're living in poverty, if you don't have opportunities, if you're having abuse in the home? So, as we're all experiencing COVID and this election as a tension in our society and as a stress that's leading to a lot of unpredictability, it makes sense to me that a lot of us can't predict what's going to happen the next week, the next day, and next month in particular.
Yeah, I know it's been a big struggle for me is to plan much further out, even just like from week to week, what's even going on the weekends and things like that. It just feels so unplanned and unpredictable. And I guess I'm not a super planned person, but to have nothing is disorienting at the least. But for the rest of y'all.
Yeah, this planning thing, I am a planner. I like to plan. I like my calendar. And I think even just this idea that things are kind of changing and they're changing quickly and that I may have a plan. And then I have to like be flexible and go with the fact that like what I planned for Sunday maybe is going to change because that simply isn't going to work because of COVID or whatever else is going on in the world. And so that is a struggle for just my own scheduling and planning. I'm very much like a list person. And my list, if you could see my list right now, is all scratched out and changed. And yeah, as a therapist particularly, that's one of the things that I talk about a lot is like plan, make lists, be organized. And I try to live that. And now really feeling like, well, how do we change this? I don't know. How do we be more flexible with our planning?
One thing that I noticed is that I realized how often in the past I would have something that I was really looking forward to, like, 2, 3 weeks from now. And in times when I would feel particularly stressed, I would think about, like, oh, that thing's coming up, or, we're going to do that together, and that'll be a really nice break. And what I notice right now is that there's kind of this sense of, like, is the other shoe going to drop? Like, are we not And it's little things, right? Like this time of year, I'd normally be schlepping my kids to a pumpkin patch or something like that. But kind of this sense of, oh, if someone gets sick at daycare, then we don't have childcare. Or like, man, what if I come down with a cold? I had a sore throat a little bit ago and was like, well, I don't want to be responsible for shutting down the whole daycare. So the thing that we were planning on doing that afternoon, we didn't do, and I went and got tested. And I just noticed how much that not feeling like there are these reliable things to look forward to, that piece really impacts me.
Yeah, I've been struggling with that too, the kind of reliable markers of time. This time of year is usually homecoming, and it's being an alumni who's not super rah-rah, but like it's the one time of year where I feel sort of connected to the institution in a bigger way than like I work at it. Because we always go to the homecoming parade and do stuff
Totally,
related to that, and my family loves that. And then like last week was homecoming and nothing happened at all. Apologies to those of you who might be working on the homecoming committee. Y'all did great, but it was different this year, you know? And holidays coming up this fall and winter all feel sort of chaotic, and talking to family and friends about what are we going to do, if anything, this year? Those markers of time just feel completely thrown away for me right
In
now.
some ways, I still feel like it's spring break, like when the university took things online last spring.
Yeah, frozen in time. I think one of the things, sorry, go ahead.
It's sad too that when the thi oh, okay, thanks. I find it sad too that the things that we used to have on the horizon as hopes or markers of like achievement, accomplishment, or just moments where we know we're going to get to rest. Those aren't there anymore, and that's really draining, I think, to go through each day knowing that there's not much to celebrate on the horizon, because even those moments of celebration that are like general that we all have, Halloween, Thanksgiving, or whatever holidays you celebrate, they look so much different, like you're talking about, because to get together with all of our family means to put all of our lives in danger. And what does it mean when we know our hearts want to be together? But to do so means to potentially get our family sick. And so, how do we reconcile that knowledge with our ability to deny that reality?
Yeah, I think it speaks to one of the themes that we were hoping to touch on in today's episode. There's such demoralization potentially in having things that you usually look forward to and then knowing that they're not going to be present. And there's a degree of decision making that goes on. Do we still continue and press on sort of as usual? Or do we substantially change things or cancel things altogether, like holidays and other kinds of things? I think a lot of my clients struggle with decision making. I'm with them in that right now, of trying to figure out how to navigate those things. And one of the pieces that we were talking about in preparing today's episode was using your values to guide decision making, to move through uncertainty and ambiguity. I wonder if folks, if y'all would be able to give a little bit more teeth to that, to talk about how using one's values can help them make decisions when things feel especially ambiguous and uncertain.
Oh, that's a big question, isn't it?
It's a really big question. The thing that keeps popping into mind, especially as we're talking about the holidays and how do we use our values to kind of be making these decisions, is that everyone's values are different. And so we're all going to be making the decisions based on our values and what feels good to us. But that may not be what feels good to other people. And so, even as we're reconciling our decisions for our values, how do we reconcile that maybe that's not going to be in agreement with everyone else in our lives? And, just a direct example is Halloween. Some people are still going to go and make that choice to go trick-or-treating or go spend time out for Halloween, and some people aren't. I think it's whatever, feels good for those values. And I just wonder, like, I don't know. How do we reconcile that piece of it as well?
I think to even begin to address this question, we need to define values. And I think when we're talking about values, we're talking about the beliefs that we have about something or a way we look at life. So values are ongoing, whereas goals have set points of ending. So for example, if we're thinking about the election, for a lot of us, there's a goal of we want a specific outcome of that. But how do we let our values, the things that we believe, drive how we approach trying to make that outcome happen, right? So if I value my political identity and part of that is canvassing or talking to people about my beliefs about why they should vote in a way that's similar to my own, but I also really care about my family and know that not everybody in my family holds the same political identity, I'm going to have to look at those two values of how do I see my responsibility to my country in living my values and helping promote what I think could be a better future for us? And how do I also respect that value of I love my family and want to get along with them? So we have to like look at those things as we're making decisions, say, how can I respect both of them or which one is most important for me to respect in a given situation? So my political values are going to be consistent and there's a ton of people I can talk to about that. Do I have to have my family in on that conversation if they're not willing or open to being respectful or kind in those conversations? So I think to let our values guide us means to look at what is most meaningful to us in any given situation and acting with the integrity that we hold ourselves to, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's really well said. Well, I think one of the things that oftentimes I struggle with as a therapist is when my clients are talking about their values, we're kind of defining them, separating from goals, like you were talking about, Brittany, and we bump up against values that feel conflicting. So for example, traditions like holidays are something that a client might value. And also, and so part of that might be like getting together with their family, seeing them, seeing friends, that kind of thing. But a conflicting value might be not getting their family or friends sick and maintaining health and well-being. And the decision point, the stickiness of that choice feels like there are two competing values that come up head to head. And so I see my clients struggle with it. And then I, as their therapist, at times struggle with how to find the nuance between those things. And I wonder if y'all have thoughts about how to navigate something like that when it's in your therapy, but it's also in your personal lives when you have conflicting values that bump up against each other.
Yeah. I think about it like right now in the season that we're in like conversations with friends where I know that one of the things I value is those relationships, and like I don't know that this would be a stated value, but the comfort of the folks that I'm in conversation with. And then I think about it in this election season with discourse that folks have, and also my value of we need to protect human rights and not enable things that chip away at human rights. And so I think about how that can come up in conversation where a person says something and I value the friendship and you know, kind of that unstated like social norms of I guess like comfort in conversation. And then there's that value of like human rights and kind of my stance on certain political issues. And in making that decision, sometimes in the moment, it's so tricky and we go with the social norm, but I try to think about in an hour, in a day, in a week, like what am I going to wish that I'd done? And sometimes I think, you know, when we were talking about this before, we talked about kind of stepping into our values. And sometimes for me, being able to project into the future and think about like what is most consistent with the person I want to be, and that can be empowering to live the value that's maybe a little harder to live in the moment, but that is the one that feels most deeply held.
I love that idea of kind of forecasting into the future and sort of understanding what value that I will wish that I moved towards if I don't. I think that's really thoughtful.
I used to have a thing up in my office. Actually, it's still there. I just haven't seen it in my office. That is a picture, and then under it says, "Remember who you wanted to be." And I always go back to that. And I struggle with the fact that the sentence is in past tense. I'm like, remember who you want to be, because that's always updating, not past. But thinking about each moment and remembering, how do you want to carry your identity? How do you want to see yourself? And when we have moments of pain with people, we often let the frustration guide us. But usually the frustration is not the way we want to hold the memory of it. And it's not who we typically want to see ourselves as. So how do we like breathe through that moment? Like literally just breathing with yourself, maybe putting your hands on your heart, giving a squeeze, because that's going to release some great oxytocin for you. And then saying something kind to yourself so that you can act with your integrity. Even if you want to yell, being able to say, I really want to yell at you right now. I really want to get into this with you. But I'm also going to not, because I don't think that's healthy for you or me. And you can have all that energy with you, and you can still have all the thoughts of like the anger or sadness or fear that you have, but it doesn't have to be said in a harmful way. There's ways that we can communicate even more directly what we want to say and feel to somebody, but it doesn't have to be said in the aggressive tone or in the like self-pity tone or whatever it is that is coming across inside of ourselves. We can correct, or we can kind of edit how we want that to come out so that we're using it for the betterment of ourselves and our relationships, rather than using it as a way to distance ourselves and bring harm.
I love that.
Yeah, it's one of the things that we struggle with in kind of planning for today. Like, how do we respond and stay consistent with our values when emotions are high, when we're frustrated with other people?
And like also being forgiving with ourselves, right? Like us as therapists work really hard to be so emotionally present and available to people and respond to what their needs are. But like we've said many times, we are people too. And we are going up and down with this whole election, COVID, vaccine anxiety, semester anxiety, being all working at the institution. So how do we make it safe for ourselves to have our own emotional ups and downs, but not give that to other people? And I can give kind of an example of just today. Like, I know that I'm lower today in my energy. I know that I'm feeling sad. I'm feeling low. And I have that part of my brain that's just like, screw everything. Screw this. I'm done. I'm just going to check out. I'm just going to be a brat today. Like, who cares? Not going to talk. And then there's the other part of me that's like, remember, Brittany, that's not who you want to be. Remember why you decided to do this podcast. Remember why you choose this job. And then I take that breath. And I find a way to come back and connect to the people here and act with the value of being a friendly, kind human being. But that's also not denying the fact that I have that kind of lower energy. I think if you compared my voice from our first one to this one, you could probably tell that there's like
I know what I'm doing after this episode. Going back and comparing. Going back and looking.
Oh, yeah. Oh, good. There we go. How can you tell what Brittany's feeling? Register a voice. Communication skills.
That resonates so much with me, Brittany. Because I feel like with all of the uncertainty, especially towards the end of a day or end of the week, certainly, I feel like my emotional bandwidth, like my battery is super low. And it's really hard for me to find that ability to pause when I'm feeling tapped out with all the uncertainty. But I think you've spoken so well to the kind of necessity of being able to pause and then look towards like, okay, even though I'm exhausted this morning, for example, how do I still move towards the value that I have? And that might be engaging with our, with each other and with the folks who are hopefully listening as a way to still do this thing that we all care about, even though you're low energy. I think that's, I'm gonna carry that with me because I don't think that'll be helpful.
That's helpful. And even me being able to say that and do that, I have to recognize as a part of my privileged identity. Like, I'm not challenged racially. I'm not challenged sexually right now. I know that my identity as a female is challenged in our society right now, but I have so many securities in my life that allow me that space to breathe. I don't have kids running in and out of my room all the time. That's making it even more challenging for me to stay present. So as I say this, it might sound kind of simple, but there's so many nuances of difficulty in this because we are all carrying different amounts of pressure and strain and responsibility right now that might make being able to act with our values much more difficult. And so I hope that anybody who is listening to this recognizes that the goal is to always follow our values, I think, because that helps us feel better about ourselves and the way we're interacting with the world. But when we don't respond with our values and we have these bad moments, it's okay. You can pick yourself up for that. You can start treating yourself with your values at any point in the mess that you feel. So I hope that this message is more about, like, see if you can find places to take that breath and be good to yourself and listen to your values. But don't beat yourself up if you're not able to meet that expectation every time. Life is too hard to be mean to yourself. Forgive yourself. Figure out a way to support yourself in the moment, whatever that may look like. And just do the best you can right now. That's, I think, what we all need to be doing is the best that we can. Or just being, right? The best might be too hard too.
Yeah, being works in progress. And accepting when it's not so easy to just practice this thing that we're talking about, finding the values and moving towards them. It's not going to happen every time.
No, it's not.
I think throughout the show so far this morning, we've been talking about how, you know, how we try to move through this at times in the space of therapy. And when we're sitting down with a client and sort of we're carrying all this this uncertainty, fatigue with us coming into our work with folks and trying to walk alongside them while they're sorting through their uncertainty, fatigue as well. And I think about this especially related to the kind of political unrest of the country, whether it's related to racial injustice and abuse, or whether it's just related to the election season as well. I think a thing that folks don't necessarily realize when they might sit down with their therapist, they might think about it, and they also might not, is that their therapist also has a political identity as well. And so they're also grappling with, to one degree or another, the political landscape of the world. Again, whether that's related to racial or other identity injustices, or whether that's related to the upcoming election. And sometimes we talk about that with our clients. We talk about our political identities, and sometimes we don't. But I think it's a thing that some of our clients maybe don't think about all that much, or they don't realize it coming into beginning therapy with somebody like us.
Or if they do think about it, there's like that stereotype of like the blank slate, quiet therapist who doesn't bring any of their identities into the room that we're actually quite pushing away from, I think, in therapy, but I don't know if the public perception of that has. So I think some people are like, if they have a political identity, it's not going to interfere at all. And it's like, yes, we're not going to make it the bulk of our session. But we recognize that the identity that we carry does affect you, and the identity you carry does affect us. And we have to take care of ourselves and do consultation and talk out the complicating things that listening to people's different values and identities can bring up in us, whether they're similar or not.
I think sometimes about the choice point that clients have with, and I don't know how conscious it is either, but whether they share it or not. Like, I think that there are times when, especially folks who are brand new to therapy, maybe treat the space kind of like how we treat brand new friendships of, I'm not going to talk about religion or politics. And also pushing against that like, this is a space where there's not really anything that's out of bounds. And we might talk about, like, we might talk about why, you know, if a client asks me something about my personal life, my stance is that I'm pretty comfortable sharing many things. And that doesn't mean that we won't have a conversation about, like, you know, what about this information is helpful to know? Does me sharing this help settle an anticipated fear of judgment? Do you feel like I can't understand you if I don't align with you? And then it actually invites more depth to the relationship. But I guess my fear is that folks hold back because they kind of think that it's not allowed in this space.
Yeah, it's such a, I think, a misperception on most people's part is that coming into therapy, their therapist is going, they come in with good reason thinking this person's going to be completely neutral. And then the space is sort of free for me to do whatever I'd like within it, but not recognizing that the person in front of them can't possibly be a human and also neutral at the same time. Like it's not feasible for that to happen within the relationship. And actually it could be quite useful for us to find humanity in one another in the therapy space.
It's also a space to get practice in talking about it with people. Like if you are nervous to talk about your political identity with other people, well, as therapists, we're comfortable talking that out with you and supporting you and helping you hone in on the language or the communication or whatever that fear is in it. Like we can hold that and we can hold our identities too.
Do y'all ever have people find out stuff about you from outside of the space? They like learn about your political leanings or activism, or I guess just things about your life. But I'm thinking specifically about when clients learn about where you might stand on a particular issue.
I have some clients that come in having already Googled me and found out a couple little tidbits about me, particularly my research area, which is sex trafficking. So some people have found some of a video I have out there or like some research and like, oh, you do this kind of work. And so I'm like, oh, let me account for that now and talk about what that means. And I know for some people that can make them feel really anxious if they're like not. If they're seeing me for a problem that maybe doesn't look as severe as sex trafficking, they can be like, well, I don't know if this is okay. What does that mean? And like, I shouldn't feel this bad because I know you actually talk to people who do a lot of, like have a lot harder lives. So it's interesting to have that conversation a lot. Your suffering matters too.
Yeah. It's not the oppression Olympics. Like there's not pain that's worse than yours necessarily. In this space, I'm going to give it as much emotional attention as I would anybody else's.
Yeah. I wonder sometimes with clients if it would be settling to know that when we're in a session with someone, there's not an element of comparison to other clients. Like we fully enter into that session with that person. I think that maybe knowing that can help folks not feel shame. That like, hey, I'm struggling with this thing when others have more.
Yeah, you're right, Brittany. I think I've found there have been instances where people will Google me as well. And it comes with, I don't want to say that it negatively affects the therapy relationship because I don't think it does, but it definitely then allows us to shift into kind of what expectations does that client have now for me and for their therapy experience. And I just love hearing how you talk through that then with clients. Like, okay, so they expect that I've seen some really significant kinds of trauma, which you've worked with. And also, let's talk about how that will affect our work together, kind of recentering it on that. And I think that just comes with any time, even if we talk about the political piece of things, if they find out something about my political identity, there's self-disclosures in my office. Not even if they have to look that hard. You can come into the physical space and understand how I feel about things politically. And then it can start a dialogue between us about the expectations for the kind of care that you're going to receive, the way that I might feel about you as a client. And I actually get excited for moments like that where we can start to sort through the anticipated reactions that clients might have to me or to the things that they think I think or feel. I think that actually really enriches therapy as opposed to hinders it. But I think a lot of clients are afraid to start that conversation when they find out something about us, or they don't even have to look that hard and they understand something about us.
Yeah, you know, I'm kind of the mind right now that therapists are going to be revolutionized by the current time. And as I referenced earlier, there's that history of the blank slate therapist. And then there's feminist therapy that says, you know, we are people in the room. Remember that, like we have our identities. And I think we're going to probably move into a next evolution of this where our identities that we carry, kind of a wide range of them, are going to be expected to be known before somebody even comes in the room because of, I think, how tense things are. And I think there is this, there's this social political kind of battle we have going on in our country. And I think people deserve to know who they're talking to know their level of safety, relatability. And I think this pattern of us holding it back is interesting. And I've obviously bought into that because I am a therapist today and I've been taught and trained in that way. But I also have let the guards down a little bit more around that. And as I think about the next incarnation of my identity as a therapist, I'm wondering how I might shift even more towards disclosure of identity up front rather than leaving it as a guessing game, and in order to support and let the person know that they're safe with me, in a sense. I think there's a lot of lack of safety in our world, and when we're talking with someone and we're choosing to open up to them and we're asking them to help guide our next steps in life or to help us understand ourselves and making those choices, we need to feel safe enough with the identity that they hold and not just presume or assume. And I think that's a little bit hypocritical of us therapists to expect people to just open up to us without having an understanding of the safety that we carry, because there are people out there who aren't safe. I know that when we were looking for a therapist for my brother once, we started with someone, and then after like it going wrong for a while, I was like, oh yeah, I'm supposed to look up that database. And this guy had like a whole history of stalking a former patient, of DUIs, of all these things. And it's like, I should have done that upfront research. And there is a way that everybody can research their therapist for any legal issues or problems with the board. So highly recommend doing that first. I can try to make sure we put that in our footnotes so you can see that that exists. But just, I think there needs to, we need to take some of the power that we carry in therapy and the ways that we like enforce our power differences and minimize them more. And this is just my ramblings and values right now. And it might totally shift in another day or two, but just identities are so important. And we need our clients to feel safe.
I completely agree with that. And I think that moving in that direction, we talked about values earlier, like that does get us closer to our values. I think a lot of therapists would say that, you know, we are invested in helping clients do the work that they want to be doing and not imposing ourselves on that. But also the idea that we could remove ourselves and our identities and our values and whatnot from that conversation is pretty conceited and arrogant.
No kidding.
We all have our lived frame, and being able to name it, us being able to name it, invites it into the therapy room. I sometimes wonder, you know, the tension there that I felt was discussed a little bit in my training was how to invite conversation, but not dominate or steer in a direction where then the client feels like assumptions are being made about their lived experience. You know, if I say like, hey, you're talking to me as a white woman about this, how does that feel? And I think like being able to put it out there that it's something we can talk about and then step back and follow the client's lead. And you know, I trust what my clients tell me. I think that that is also a very necessary part of it. So they get to decide how much we engage with that conversation.
I love that because it gives the client autonomy to be able to say, to what degree am I going to enter into this? It gives them some of the power back rather than this sort of top-down, I guess in my opinion, kind of colonialist way of pursuing therapy of like, this is, I'm going to impose my values upon you. This is the system that we're going to operate in. And you just get to sort of deal with it, as opposed to like, you get to actually make some decisions about the degree to which you are expressing your full self with your therapist.
There are some awesome folks doing work on decolonizing therapy.
Heck yeah.
I I just think, you know, like we're lifelong learners too. I think that's kind of a necessary part of the job. But that's something that I'm really liking being exposed to now. Wishing I'd been exposed to earlier in my training, but appreciating the good work that folks are doing.
Do you have some good names to share? I would be Jennifer so interested. Mullen.
Let me check on how I'm pronouncing her name. Yeah.
I'm not just asking for me.
So, yeah, Jennifer Mullen is someone who is on Instagram, and that's where I first started, honestly, like learning about decolonizing therapy and what that looks like. And, you know, from there, kind of branching out to other folks. But she is on there on Instagram as at Decolonizing Therapy. And, you know, great to think about and just question like the system that we're in and if there are ways to rectify imbalances of power in that.
Thank you so much for that. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I guess it just goes to, I think it just goes to say that when clients enter into a space expecting that therapists are going to have, this like behind the screen sort of opaque way of showing up in the space, that there are a lot of therapists, the four on this podcast today, and obviously many others who are writing about and posting about their wish to be less kind of rigid in how they show up in the space. And I think that it's appropriate for clients to test the waters with their therapist and to see to what degree is their therapist willing to show up and be transparent about who they are and what they believe. That might be related to political identities. That might be related to other kinds of things too. So I think that that's really appropriate for clients to want that from their therapist.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, if a therapist can't provide that, if that's not who they are, it's okay too. Like finding the right therapist for you is a bit like speed dating. Go out once or twice with each of them, like try a session. If it doesn't feel right, see if that's the space where you want to talk it out and feel like it could be supportive. And if not, go look for somebody else. You know, you're not going to click or want to open up to everybody. And that's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a balance that I guess I hope that clients can strike of affirming that necessity to have a therapist who works well with them and is willing to be transparent with them and helps them feel safe in the space so they can do good work in therapy, being able to test that out. And also, when you find yourself in a place where you're uncertain about those things, or perhaps you disagree with your therapist, or you hold a different political identity than your therapist, to be able to talk that through with your therapist. I think some folks are like, well, once I learned that my therapist and I have a different political identity, then it was very clear that we weren't going to work together anymore. And Kristen, I thought you brought up such a nice point when we were talking about this before the podcast about how to navigate that within your relationship with your therapist when you find that there's a potential disagreement or misalignment. I wonder if you could talk a little bit more about that.
I wish I remember what I said.
Oh, no. Around the new experience.
And yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that is, that's a frame that I think of often with therapy, that therapy for many folks gives us a new way of relating to a person and maybe of having the response be different from what we've experienced in the past. So for someone who maybe has the expectation of our political stances are different and I'm going to share what mine is, and then you know, that'll change the relationship, so I'm not going to share it. Or I share it and then learn that the political stance is different. And then, you know, rather than perhaps having that look like how it can look outside of therapy, where that ends the relationship, like being able to have a new experience where both folks really engage and are listening to one another, and kind of arrive at a new way of how that relationship can look. But I temper that with also knowing that there are folks for whom, like if my therapist's political stance is different from mine, that means they are denying core aspects of my identity, or they're supporting someone who has taken actions that that take away freedoms for me and power for me. And in that stance, like, then knowing your therapist's political identity might allow you to set some really healthy limits and look for someone who is affirming of those things. So regardless, I would say clients' needs can be met in that, because I think, like, protecting our identities and not not feeling like one has to flex values, I think that's an important thing for clients as well. So sometimes not flexing values means having an open dialogue about things, and sometimes not flexing values means saying, like, hey, I need to protect my safety, and so this is not the space for me. Is that what I said, Patrick?
Yeah, I think you really nicely articulate, like, the balance that I hope clients, and this is another one of those, like, ambiguities and uncertainties. Is this the right therapist for me? I think a lot of people ask themselves that question when they start off, or even as they're continuing therapy, is this still the person who can help me? And some of those questions might come from ruptures or disagreements or differences in experiences and identity. And then the client is left to navigate, hopefully maybe alongside their therapist, does this continue to be a space that's helpful to me? And on one hand, it could be helpful to talk through those differences and consider if this could be a new experience in which I am very much cared for in this relationship and we have differences. Or is it best to leave that therapy relationship because it's not healthy, or my identities, as you were saying, are not affirmed there? I think that's the balance that sometimes clients find themselves in. I know I found myself in that position as a therapy client and sort of navigating whether or not this is the right place for me right now. Is it a conversation that I can lead to growth if I have it with my therapist, or is it just time to say goodbye? Because it's not going to be productive for us to do that. And so trying to let my values guide that decision was hard.
I also hope too that the therapists that we see, then the clients that are seeing us as therapists, know that we're also asking ourselves those questions all the time, or at least most therapists, all therapists should be. I'm going to be critical and say good therapists should be considering, like, am I the right person to be working with this person? And we know that too, over time, as we grow more assured of our identities, or as we're exploring different parts of it, we will need to move on to somebody that has more of the same identities as us if they're not the same. We know that there are different stages of growth, and sometimes we can do so much with one person and need to move on to the next. So as a clinician, I'm always asking myself, am I the right person to be working with this client? And if we hit a point where I'm like, ooh, I'm not anymore because I don't have the training, I don't have the expertise, or there's something that's holding me back from being able to give them the best of my therapy, I'm gonna be brave enough to have that conversation with the client and do what we can to get them hooked up with the next person in a very healthy and supportive way. So this is not like I'm rejecting you as a client, but it's saying I can see that my limitations here are going to get in the way of you getting the help and support that you deserve and need. So let's facilitate you getting to that next stage, or that next person. So I know that I'm always asking that as a clinician. I think we all should be. I think clients should be asking that, because We just have to know, am I going to match with this person? Is this going to be where I can do my best work or I can get the most? Yeah.
Get yourself a therapist who has that level of humility, everybody who's listening. Like, seriously, go find yourself a therapist who has that sort of self-awareness to say, like, I'm not sure if I am the best fit for you at this point or anymore, but I really want you to keep growing.
I want good things for you, you know? And I can do a lot of good things for people, but I'm not going to be great for everybody or be able to be everything for everyone, and that's a good thing. I know my limitations.
So one of the things that we were talking about in prepping for today too was this idea of self-compassion. And Brittany, I know this is a big area of expertise for you. And as people are navigating their values and trying to find kind of the next move to make that's in line with their values, I think self-compassion has a lot to lend to this. And I know you're a wealth of resources in terms of exercises and practices and self-compassion. Do you think there are things that we could lend to listeners around self-compassion related to their values?
Yeah, thanks, Pat. And I feel like I'm a novice still, a novice with like moving towards more expertise and knowledge, but still like in those early stages, which is really beautiful to know that the field is so big that I can know so much and feel like I have so much more to grow into. But you know, when we're talking about self-compassion, we use the word compassion all the time, but we use it incorrectly the majority of the time, or just in this more social way rather than what it actually means. And self-compassion or compassion means to be with suffering. Compassion is com with passé suffering. So to practice self-compassion means to care about your suffering. Right now, as so many of us are in pain and experiencing some kind of oppression or just misery in this country as we're dealing with COVID and as we're dealing with, you know, the election stuff and not knowing what's next, we need to be able to notice that we're in pain and suffering, whether that's big T or little T, so small things or big things. So stubbing my toe is a form of suffering that deserves just as much care and attention as the big issues I go through in life. Might resolve quicker, but it still deserves the same amount of care. So we notice we're in pain, and then we tend to that experience with kindness and openness to care for it. So if I stub my toe really badly, my instinct is probably going to be to swear and curse and get angry for a second. But if I let myself have that because my automatic response is just going to be there, then I stop. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, toe. I didn't mean to hit you again. I'm sorry, work floods. I'm going to empathize with the pain my body is currently going through with my toe or with my political identities that are having difficulty interacting with this world right now, right? I empathize with it. I say, how can I support this experience? So if it's my toe, I might just hold it for a second, or I might go get some ice, or I might move the thing that I keep bumping into, and apologize to myself for always being a klutz and knowing that that's probably going to be a hard thing to change. So this isn't going to be the last time I do it. And then I give that kindness. So when we practice compassion, it's notice the suffering, tend to the suffering, do something with that. So tend, when I say that, I mean like, actually get care about it, like give it some love, and then do something to support yourself in that experience. And one of the ways, if we want just like a quick like mantra to be able to go through that is pretty general, we can kind of just say to ourselves, maybe with our hand on our heart, like I said, that releases great oxytocin, is to say, this is a moment of suffering. Suffering is a part of the human experience. May I be kind to myself in this moment. Suffering is a part of the human experience. May I be kind to myself in this moment. So this gets at mindfulness. I'm aware that I'm in pain, right? We have to know. Put it in the perspective of we're not alone in this boat, because that means that there's people out there who can be a guide for you to help heal your suffering. They've been through this. We can look to them as a source of hope. And it also means that you are in a situation where you will be a guide to someone in the future too. So you can learn and dig into that and what that means. So I'm not alone in this experience. Other people have been there. Other people will be there. This is part of the life experience. May I be kind to myself? Sometimes just asking yourself to be kind to yourself can reduce some stress and tension in the body. But then follow that up with kind action. Is it a cup of tea? Is it a good conversation with a friend? Is it going to do some exercise? Is it getting involved in a political campaign? Within the abilities that you can. We have a lot of limitations right now. So this is not like, oh, I need to go do X, Y, and Z and do so much to relieve the suffering. It's like, no, do little things first. little things, and if there's room for a bigger thing, invite yourself to that. But gentle kindness. This is a really painful time, and as far as I have been able to see and research, kindness is really the only antidote to pain. So be good to each other. Be good to yourselves.
Oh, that's great. I'm going to have a great day now. This is excellent. Thank you for sharing that, Brittany.
Welcome. It was nice to be on here with you all today. I have an appointment I have to get going to as a therapist. We're always moving from one thing to the next. But I wish everybody a beautiful day and good luck moving
Thank
through
you
this
so
time.
Much, Brittany.
Thank you, Brittany.
That was a lovely way to end.
Mm-hmm. Thank you all. Awesome people. Good therapists. Good listeners. Take care.
I don't think we can top that, to be honest. I think this is a good place to us to wrap. What do y'all
I
think?
I agree.
Yeah. I wanted to put in a really quick plug. If you are trying to find this show, but it's not available on your podcast app or platform of choice, shoot us an email. You can do that now. The email address that we have for the show, let me just make sure I'm going to get it right because I don't want to mess it up, it's UCS, as in University Counseling Service, UCS-therapistpodcast@uiowa.edu. And let us know. Maybe you use some app that nobody else does, but you really want to listen to the show where you already have all of your stuff. So let us know if there's a platform that we can upload our show to. But otherwise, it's been great talking to y'all this morning.
Thanks for bringing us together on a Monday.
We'll see if we can find a different time because we're obviously tired. But I think this was good.
Yeah. Good Monday morning.
All right. We'll see. Yeah, exactly. We'll see you all next time. Yeah.